the snow has turned to water. Christmas days have come and gone. Broken toys and faded colors are all that's left to linger on. I hate graveyards and old pawn shops, for they always bring me tears. I can't forgive the way they rob me of my childhood souvenirs. Memories, they can't be bought, they can't be won at carnivals for free. Well, it took me years to get those souvenirs, and I don't know how they slipped away from me. Hearts and dirty windows may laugh difficult to say. That's why last night and this morning always look the same to me. And I hate reading old love letters, for they always bring me tears. I can't forgive the way they rob me of my sweetheart's souvenirs. Memories, they can't be bought, they can't be won at carnivals for free. Well, it took me years to get those souvenirs, and I don't know how they slipped away from me. That's for Steve Goodman.
All right, welcome back. Top of the third hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. It's Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. We're on the phones. We still have Dave in Nevada.
Yeah, I just want to make a last point, and then I'll let you go. So when I was watching this, when I'm watching these CNN videos with Bill Gates and Sanjay Gupta and Alice Cooper, I started to realize the people that you should be paying attention to are not, you shouldn't really be paying attention to Donald Trump. I think people like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates have way more power behind the scenes than Donald Trump would ever seem to have in terms of wielding political power. Just look at look at someone like Dr. Fauci. I think that guy has way more power than Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well,
and so go ahead.
The evidence to your point, I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that we should be looking at least more scrutinously. I mean, the press is reporting that Donald Trump is at war with his own cabinet sometimes, and who is he really at war with? You know, the press has reported from time to time, but not really that he is at war with Bill Gates, for example. That really doesn't come out, though, the way that it should. And, you know, again, I mean, we heard just in the last 24-hour news cycle that based on his remarks recently, Donald Trump's remarks, that the World Health Organization is culpable, and there's all of this it seems like infighting, you know, China's an enemy today and next day a frenemy. And but the point is that everywhere you look, Bill Gates seems to cast an overarching shadow. You know, he is very influential when it comes to the World Health Organization, very deeply involved in all of these enterprises, as I've said. I mean, obviously for decades now, but right now, you know, CEPI, Gavi, ID 2020, the COVID-19 Therapeutics Accelerator, all of the vaccine manufacturers, some of them like Inovio and Johnson & Johnson, that, you know, he's invested in directly and indirectly through CEPI and so on. So, I mean, deeply involved. And that should shake the cognitive dissonance loose. I know we hear that the president is the leader of the free world, but when you actually look at what's going on, to your point, Dave, you can see there's more to that story. You know, the World Health Organization is sort of trying to bully the world, including the United States, into certain things. And who is casting a shadow over the UN? It's the ghost of David Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller. It's Bill Gates, among perhaps others. But he's the most obvious, I would say. And that should, you know, that should shock people awake, so to speak, to your point, what you're saying.
Well, here's the interesting thing that I'll leave you with is that, yeah, like you're saying, Donald Trump talks about all of his enemies and this infighting stuff, but do you ever hear the words or the name Bill Gates come out of his mouth? You never hear his name. Mm-hmm. You never hear Donald Trump actually mention Bill Gates' name. And Bill Gates is the one that's pushing all of these products, these vaccines and all these different programs. And it's almost like they're polar opposites. You would think someone like Donald Trump, who's as bombastic as he is, he would at least mention
Absolutely.
Someone that's diametrically opposed, but he doesn't even mention, as if he doesn't even exist.
Chuck Schumer is a lightweight.
Exist.
He's a whatever, you know, all these people. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. As bombastic is a great way to put it. Yep.
Yeah. That's one of the big psyops, is that all these people, like he talks about this invisible enemy. They're not invisible. He knows who they are. They're a bunch of billionaires, but he doesn't want to mention their names, does he?
Well, it's interesting, you know, so you have quotes, Teddy Roosevelt, FDR, you know, the thing that Teddy Roosevelt wrote, gosh, I forget exactly, you know, and what Woodrow Wilson wrote to the same effect in his The New Freedom back in 1913, this, you know, and for that matter, you know, Benjamin Disraeli, all of these quotes that float around talking about a group, you know, the way Disraeli put it, you know, a very, you know, you and I know that a very different, you know, very different personages govern the world than what people imagine. That's a paraphrasing, but, you know, I forget. I'm going to have to look those up real quick and because, you know, these people, I mean, Teddy Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson, FDR, for example, you know, and then we talk about, I mean, I wanted to play a little excerpt of JFK's 1962 Yale University commencement, which I have mentioned again recently. To me, when I think of what you're talking about, and people who say, you know, JFK didn't intend to or whatever, you know, when it comes to things like EO 11110, those kinds of issues, when you listen to what he was saying in and the people that he was naming in his 1962 Yale University commencement, June 11, 1962, it's hard for me to be convinced, if not impossible, that he wasn't hip to the game that was being played all around him. He's naming everybody. I mean, the list of names that he's naming is heavily laden with Skull and Bonesmen. And, you know, he's given the Yale commencement, and he's sort of, you know, joking, but I think it was a shot across the bow. It was a warning. And so to your point, you know, there's a hinting at certain things, this invisible enemy, like certain folks have talked about, you know, and these guys that say things like no one, you know, there's a conspiracy, no one deigns to utter whatever. But yeah, I agree. I think the real invisible enemy is not the so-called virus.
It's not the virus.
The real enemy has engineered a mind virus.
And here's the other brainwashing thing that I think they're doing with all the words that they're using. What they're basically in the end telling us is going on is that the actual virus, it's us. We are the virus.
Right.
That's what they're telling us.
And that's my point with the Club of Rome. Absolutely. Absolutely.
We are the virus. That's what they're telling us with all the language, with all the asymptomatic mm-hmm. stuff. You're asymptomatic. That means you have the virus. You don't show any symptoms. You must have the virus.
Right.
You must wear a mask because you're hiding. You're hiding it because you're not sneezing and coughing. You see, you're silent.
Right. Even though Deborah Birx stands up there right next to the president and, you know, tells us, on one hand, you might be asymptomatic and unwittingly spreading disease, as the LA Times put
right.
it, the silent spreaders. But she's standing next to the president just hours, really, 48 to 72 hours after she had a fever, got herself tested. But I'm, you know, meticulous, even though even she and they have all talked about the fact that these tests, Donald Trump himself, these tests have been unreliable. Was it a reliable test, Deborah Birx? Because you're standing next to what we're told is the leader of the free world. You seem awful casual for someone who recommends the rest of us go lock ourselves in a closet somewhere because we could be silent spreaders, asymptomatic people unwittingly spreading disease. It's completely hypocritical, and it's an obvious psyop. But you're right.
Yeah.
The rest of us are the virus in that context, absolutely.
Yep. And that's the subtle but powerful message that's sinking in everyone's brain.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so this is what's going to I think it's going to turn people against each other at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And
completely agree.
I just wanted to leave you with that because I saw where you're going with this whole Bill Gates thing in the rabbit hole and trust me, I mean, yeah, I understand. I understand I understand to a certain degree what's going on with all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just watch CNN.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Anyways, I'll let you go, Chris.
Thanks, Dave. Much appreciated. I wish that we all understood, at least to some degree, I mentioned that video that Dan Dix did where he was talking about Bernays, reading from chapter 4 of Bernays' propaganda, and you can see it happening. Quickly before we go back to the phones. You know, people are freaking out because they're watching, you know, folks like Dave, I'm sure, not to put words in anyone's mouth, but, you know, we are all sort of watching our neighbor, so to speak, buy into these psyops, and they don't even know that they're being manipulated. Larkin, Texas has been telling us this for years. You know, folks like Nikki Rapana, for decades, you know, certain people have been saying, you are being absolutely led by the nose, and you don't even realize it. Nicky Rapana tries for years. You guys are totally being led down a primrose path of destruction. And finally, she's like, you know what? I'm out. I'm done. Because y'all ain't getting it. I'm just going to go live my life in peace. And anyway, again, not trying to put words in anybody's mouth. I'm just saying people have been shouting from the rooftops, lovingly, so to speak, in a, you know, with this message. And what's happening now at this moment is in Bernaysian fashion, you know, so Dan Dix in that video did a good job of pointing out, you know, reading again from Bernays's Propaganda, 1928, Chapter 4, Piano Salesman. You know, if you want to sell a piano to somebody, the old way to do it was to, and we should just play that. I intended to play the clip, but, you know, I want to get to the calls. So there were some things that I wanted to string together, but I think the calls are what's important. So anyway, Dan Dix says, you know, reading that story, paraphrasing quickly, you know, the old way to sell a piano, Bernays wrote, was you would say, I mean, before the turn of the 20th century, Stephen Covey, as I've mentioned before, did a good job of analyzing the literature and the shift that occurred after the 20th century. And we went from the character ethic, as he puts it, to the personality ethic. Tips, tricks, and techniques to manipulate people. The Bernaysian way. Then we get the century of the self, as Adam Curtis called it. Chapter 1, Happiness Machines. Or Episode 1, Happiness Machines. All about Edward Bernays. But I've been telling people recently, haven't we, you know, that was the based on the pleasure principle. Freud's pleasure principle was the will to pleasure. Now we've shifted over to Jung and Nietzsche and the power principle, the will to power. The Leninist, you must come to power, comrades, at all costs. That's all that matters. Bill Gates, you can see, throughout his business career, operated on that principle. Seize power and never relinquish it. Now he has, you know, he considers himself the emperor of the world. Anyway, Dan Dix talking about Bernays writing about, you know, the old way to sell a piano was to say, hey, I have this piano, it has these great features, makes great music, you'll like it. The new way to sell a piano is you create this environment where it seems in vogue to have a music room and to play music and to do all these things, so that in the old days, you go to the customer and say, please buy my piano. But in this new method, the Bernaysian method, the person comes to you and says, please sell me a piano. And the tie back is we have people all around us begging their kidnapper for more slavery. That's what's happening. And some of us, you know, like Dave in Nevada, see it clearly. Maybe we don't see the entirety of, you know, the scope and, you know, breadth of the conspiracy and the conspirators, but we see that clearly. And most people have no idea it's even happening. The way Woodrow Wilson put it in his The New Freedom, A Call for the Emancipation of, you know, the Generous Energies, blah, 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 A Call for Socialism in America. He wrote, since I entered politics, I have chiefly had men's views confided to me privately. Some of the biggest men in the United States in the field of commerce manufacture are afraid of somebody, are afraid of something. They know that there is a power somewhere so organized, so subtle, so watchful, so interlocked, so complete, so pervasive, that they had better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it. That's what Woodrow Wilson wrote in 1913. I think that's the real invisible enemy. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Had to disenthrall itself from an inheritance of truisms and stereotypes. So in our time, we must move on from the reassuring repetition of stale phrases to a new, difficult, but essential confrontation with reality. For the great enemy of the truth is very often not the lie, deliberate, contrived, and dishonest, but the myth, persistent, persuasive, and unrealistic. Too often we hold fast to the cliches of our forebears. We subject all facts to a prefabricated set of interpretations. We enjoy the comfort of opinion without the discomfort of thought. Mythology distracts us everywhere, in government as in business, in politics as in economics, in foreign affairs as in domestic affairs. But today I want to particularly consider...
I really think that he had more on the ball than many people give him credit. Back to the phones. Where are we? Fred in Iowa. Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Job. I was going to be brief, but my God, you've got me really up here. I'm going to give a website out, but I'm going to do that later on. And it's on topic and pertinent to the show and what you've been saying. But you've said it many, many times, but I wonder how many people get it or even study it or try to understand. And that is the Hegelian dialectic, normalcy bias, and cognitive dissonance. People don't want to know. Now, I'll say this right now, not to curry favor, but I like very much the way you run your show. Okay. Your conversation with Dave in Nevada, and Dave in Nevada covered a lot of salient points. When you just played that clip of what Kennedy said, I've been trying to get a lot about speeches of Kennedy for a long time. Kennedy was the only president that stated and described a conspiracy. The only one. He talked about the conspiracy. Now, here's the website.
The reason that we played that clip specifically, speaking of the invisible enemy, is because he named names in that commencement speech. Many, many names, and including his cabinet members, you know, guys like McGeorge Bundy, for example. Anyway.
Yes. Very important. But this website, I suggest strongly, can be very helpful. Now, I'm going to repeat it so people can go to it if they want to. You can only take 22 minutes or go through the whole thing. Now, here is the website. Friends of David Goldberg. Friends of David Goldberg. Friends of David Goldberg. That covers what you've been saying, and Dave in Nevada have been saying, and what I've been trying to get out for years. Okay, I could go on for a long time, but I won't hang up, but I'm through, Chris. Thank you.
All right, well, I appreciate it. Appreciate it, Fred. Interesting, you know, that's an interesting citation. I have noticed a rise in you know, again, there is a we need to define terms. And as far as I can tell, it really sort of comes down to four words in the simple. This is really fascinating how this is happening too, and it can't be by accident. I don't know exactly how this works, but I think that this definitely is an issue or an aspect of the conflict that gets back to the self-targeting stuff that I mentioned, like the you know, the articles, the what was it, the you know, Colorado police apologize, that one, and then the Montana and Idaho citizens protest on constitution, these kinds of things. Along the same lines, there's this stuff that's going on. Four words. And the four words are generally something like anti-Semitism, Semitism, Ashkenazi, and Sephardi. Those are the four words. And if you understand, you know, if we can define terms, we can understand and delineate who's who in the zoo, then the conflict that is intended melts away, and you have Albert Pike's letter to Mazzini on the periphery, and you have Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, Jesus himself, seven letters of seven churches in two out of seven letters, mentions a certain cast of characters, a certain collection of rascals. Stick around, we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
so, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
The Republic Broadcasting Network late night premiere show of Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the Red Pill.
How would you like to earn an extra $10,000 or more a month from the comfort of your home? We show you how to win with a home-based business opportunity. This could be one of the best financial decisions you ever make. Work from home, full-time or part-time. Plus, you'll never have to talk to anyone. Our professional sales team closes all your sales for you, and you keep 70% of all the sales made. You could be earning money while you're sleeping, shopping, working out, wherever you are, day or night. Our system goes to work for you. You can make a great income without any special computer skills or sales training. Plus, you get paid fast, within just 24 to 48 hours after our professional sales team closes a sale for you. Let us help you eliminate your financial concerns. You could be earning enough money to pay off debt, buy a house, a car, or whatever the case may be. We've got you covered. If you'd like to add an extra $10,000 or more a month to your portfolio, and you would like to know exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it, go now to www.getstartedwithus.com. That's www.getstartedwithus.com. Again, that's www.getstartedwithus.com.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We had an apartment in the city, and me and Loretta liked living there. Well, it's been years since the kids have grown a life of their own and left us alone. John and Linda live in Omaha, and Joe is somewhere on the road, and we lost Davy in the Korean War, and I still don't know what for. It don't matter anymore.
Welcome back.
You know that old trees.
Bottom of the third hour already of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. Governor Cuomo says we're going to do more testing in minority communities. Like I said, the HIV/AIDS depopulation treatment, you know, because they don't have access to quality health care. So we need to help them. Help them. Let's define terms. So this issue, briefly, and then back to the phones. Four words: anti-Semitism, Semitism, Ashkenazi, Sephardi. The word anti-Semitism, the etymology of the word is, it ties back to Shem. So, If you go to the Wikipedia entry for Semitic people, for example, it says right on Wikipedia even, and the reason I mention this is because this is the pedestrian version of what has been sanitized, whitewashed, occluded, obscured. You know, it says Semitic people, ethnic, cultural, race, et cetera, the term is now largely obsolete because, you know, the PSYOP had its effect. Anyway, it says first used in the 1770s by members of the Göttingen School of History. That's interesting. Do some research on the Göttingen School and what was going on there. And there was a conspiracy hatched, we're told, an alliance, an unholy alliance between a Jesuit priest, Weishaupt, you know, Spartacus, and a rabbinical student who changed his name to his daddy's money-changing business, Rothschild. They hatched a plot, and the rest is history, as they say. So the Göttingen School is responsible for, you know, the perversion of language in this case, shall we say. And many times I've talked about Toynbee, A Study of History, 12-volume series, and him writing about how essential language is in the conversion of a civilization. This, you know, these guys have been at this a long time. There are continuations like Tavistock, you know, Chatham House, the cultural Marxist, and so forth. But, you know, these are the roots of this terminology, and it ties back to Shem. Where is that? On here somewhere. I've seen it recently. Oh, yeah. First used, blah, 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 1770. This biblical terminology for race was derived from Shem. Even Wikipedia knows. So then you skip forward to... So who was Shem? Genesis chapter 10. I got to do this fast. Genesis chapter 10 records the generations of Noah after the flood. Verse 3, the sons of Gomer, actually verse 2, the sons of Japheth were Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tyrus. And again, you start reading through Ezekiel, for example, and these are interesting names. Verse 3, the sons of Gomer were Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarmah. Wikipedia, Jewish ethnic divisions. At the top of the page, it says Jewish ethnic divisions refer to a number of distinct communities, blah, 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 although considering, actually, I should start with Revelation 2:9 and 3:9. Probably, because Jesus himself, speaking seven letters to seven churches, quickly, Revelation 2:9, I know your tribulation and the poverty, but you're rich, and the blasphemy by those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Who's saying they're Jews? They are. Jesus says they're not. They say they are. Jesus says they're not. I'll tell you who I believe. Revelation 3:9. Behold, I will cause those of the synagogue of Satan who say that they are Jews and are not, but lie. I will make them come and bow down at your feet and make them know that I have loved you. These, you know, there's a cast of characters who call themselves something. So, Jewish ethnic divisions, Wikipedia entry. Although considered one single self-identifying ethnicity. Huh. Self-identifying ethnicity. That's interesting. And then you skip down to the diaspora section, second paragraph. In the middle Byzantine period, the Khan of Khazaria in the northern Caucasus and his court converted to Judaism. Huh, that's interesting. Self-identified converts. Then you skip down to the section titled Modern Divisions. Historically, European Jews have been classified into two major groups, Ashkenazim and Sephardim. So I just read in Genesis 10, Ashkenaz is the grandson of Japheth. The term Semitism is etymologically, it derives from Shem. In other words, Semites are Shem's descendants. So if you're anti-Semitic, you don't like Shem and his descendants. So if Ashkenaz is the grandson of Japheth, Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ashkenaz was the descendant of Japheth. If you don't like Ashkenaz, you would be considered anti-Japhethic, not anti-Semitic, because Ashkenaz was not a descendant of Shem. And if you skip further forward, there is, you know, a general acknowledgement, even on Wikipedia, despite the diversity, Ashkenazi Jews represent the bulk of modern Jewry, estimated at between 70-80% of Jews worldwide, et cetera, however, it's 90%. So you put that together with the Sephardic community, and you have upwards of between 90 and 100% of folks who are considered Jewish by, you know, most standards around the world today. But the problem is, so Sepharad is a region that's mentioned in the book of Obadiah around Spain, which is why these folks are, you know, considered Spanish or Portuguese Jews or Jewry. And so that's the predominant crowd. But I would say that in the orthodoxy of the term Semitism, this is a contradiction of terms. You know, and when you start using the word Hebrew, for example, which are the descendants of Heber, you have further clarification. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. We got to get back to the phones. But anti-Semitism is a term that means if you are anti-Semitic, you don't like Shem's descendants. The Ashkenazi and Sephardic folks do not have, by the nature of that term alone, Ashkenazi or Sephardi, a direct connection to Shem or his descendants. I'm not saying they don't at all. I'm just saying by the nature of those terms, there is no direct tie to Shem. So it's a term of art that's been created again by the Gottingham School for what? To foment this controversy, to further foment this controversy. That's why. And it works very effectively. So if you are, you know, and here's the, to me, here's the big takeaway. You hear that these groups are the predominant groups around the world that represent the Jewish community. Well, where are the Semitic people? I keep asking this question, where are the Shemites? You don't hear from them. And if you think it through from Old Testament to New, if you're the devil and Jesus shows up on the landscape and, you know, obviously it's the end for the devil and, you know, the third that were cast out of heaven, you might, you know, if you're emotionally attached to any of this stuff, you'd be probably upset, one could imagine. So you might want to erase those folks who are responsible for bringing this about, so to speak, you know, from the historical landscape. You might want to unperson them in Orwellian fashion. And I challenge anyone to find evidence, especially in the mainstream, of Semitic peoples. You won't find it. They've been largely erased from history. And they're, you know, so the Rothschild contingent, for example, what do they refer to themselves as? Largely Ashkenazic peoples, which now, to make the distinction and to be done with this, to make the distinction, that's not to say, you know, that all people are whatever. That's where we start getting in trouble. And Jesus himself, you know, people say, well, you know, it was the Jews that crucified Jesus. Was it really? Or was there a psyop similar to what we see happening today, for example, where people were saying, crucify him, because Jesus himself said from the cross, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. And he seemed to make a distinction with certain people. You know, the scribes and Pharisees got one treatment. Those who came to him with the faith of a child got another. And as we've been reminded recently, he did drive the money changers out of the temple. Was it Ken that brought that up, I want to say? So he's not a wimp, but he is, you know, infinitely compassionate, you might say. And these are the terms that are important to understand when that subject comes up. And that's way too much time on that. Back to the phones. Ted in Hawaii, right?
Yeah, hi, Chris. Thank you.
Hi, Ted.
It's an honor to be on. I've been enjoying listening to you. I do like the way you run your show, Chris. And so I've been emboldened to call in and share a few thoughts with you. They are relevant to what's going on. But I would
appreciate
like to
the call.
Thank you for
Thanks, Ted.
Well, thank you for the rundown on the Sephardic and things. I'm married to a Sephardic Jewish lady from Israel, living in Hawaii. I am a Christian, born again. I'm an airline pilot, retired. Good old flag-waving American boy. Somehow ended up with this lovely lady from the other side of the world, but she is amazing. She has really helped open my eyes to a lot of things. She's a believer in Yeshua as a Messiah.
Well, hopefully,
she told me
all of that was just to try to dispel the conflict that's been fomented. Again, I think the big takeaway in what I said is the point that this term of art and controversy and conflict was created, you know, around the time that Spartacus launched his May Day conspiracy, and it's been very effective ever since then at dividing people. And that's all. I just want to dispel the conflict that shouldn't exist. Anyway.
Well, I agree. I mean, I'm more and more aware Christianity is a very Jewish religion, and we are a continuation of all this wonderful tradition and teaching and the Ten Commandments. And this is what I'd like to get to, the Decalogue. It came, from Exodus, and the number four commandment is observe the Sabbath and keep it holy. One day in seven, which we have forsaken in our country. And I'm a child of the 50s. I was at Kennedy's inauguration. You've been talking about him. I was there. I was 8 years old. I was 10 feet away from him. So, I mean, I'm very aware of what he was saying and how much we lost when he was murdered. And I think our country's never been the same, but I'd just like to say the Ten Commandments about the rest and the Sabbath, I think that's got something to do with why the whole world is now shut down and being kept at home, actually basically observing the Sabbath. And you mentioned we should be reflecting. We should be sitting and thinking and analyzing our life, and people are fighting it. They're not doing it. They're doing everything but that. But I'd like to mention tonight, of course, is the Passover in Israel, tonight as we speak. And the full super moon is out tonight. And we're just living in a time of truly biblical significance of these events that are happening now. And they're in full lockdown in Israel, by the way. They cannot go out of their house. The last time, coincidentally, that they were in full lockdown was the original Passover back in Moses' time. So think about that, the relevance of what's happening today. And just to jump to Bill Gates, just to shift paradigm, I realized something listening to you, and it's really pertinent that you're talking about Bill Gates, but I haven't heard anyone bring this up, but I'm an analog man living in a digital age. And man, I have a hard time. I'm struggling. I'm fighting with my computer right now, trying to figure out how it thinks, because I don't think the way that computer works. And this is what I'd like to make the point is that all the modern generation, they've been trained by Bill Gates himself to be digital thinkers. And that is punch the button, get the solution. Problem, solution, problem, solution. Mm-hmm. I'm an analog.
Yep.
I'm
Skinner
an old-fashioned. Yeah, and I don't think that way. I do not. I think I have to say, where's the beginning? Where's the middle? Where are we going? How do we get to the end? What do I have to do in the process? I just can't seem to think like they want me to think, and I think it's good.
Well, that's probably better, I would argue. Yeah. Absolutely. I hope it doesn't change.
Yes, I hope so, and I get that from you, and I have the sense you're in between. You're both. I think you can handle and speak to the younger, and I try, but I'd like to say Bill Gates, as you pointing out, this guy is not thinking right, but again, I think we're missing the obvious. He is a product of his own self. He's a digital mind. You know, he's a problem-solution guy, and the whole world has been conditioned by him to, you know, the young people expect that. Congress wants to do that, throw more money, make more laws. 9/11 was the last big thing, and look what they did. Look how much we lost. And the real damage is done by Congress after these events, not by the events. So I'm in Hawaii. Things are locked down. There's nobody on Waikiki Beach. I've been here over 40 years. This is scary. I mean, there should be 20,000 people on the beach. There, I went yesterday morning. There's nobody. So something is coming. I mean, the tidal wave, they say when the tide goes out, be careful. That means the tsunami is coming. I'm saying that metaphorically. It really could be coming. But I just think, again, the thinking, Bill Gates is not a salesman, thank God. That's why he's so bad at articulating his things. But I tell you, who is a good salesman? Donald Trump. He's a really good salesman. That's exactly what he's about. I think that's really what we need at this point. And I don't want to get everybody offended, but I mean, we need someone to articulate something good, something hopeful. He is a salesman, and Dr. B-I-R-X, that stands next to him with the scarf, the bandana, she reminds me of the Frito Bandito. She just needs to put the mask on to rob the bank, but she came from the AIDS hoax deal. So anyway, I brought up a lot, but I just wanted to say I'm an analog man in a digital world, and it's hard for me, but I don't want to change. I'm happy with my way of thinking. And thank you for listening to me.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Ted. Much appreciated.
Yeah. God bless you. Thank you.
You too. And a report from Hawaii. Back to the phones quickly. Ken in New York, right? Ken in New York.
Yes.
Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Boy, what a great show. You know, listening to some of the other comments by other callers, I think our favorite turkey vulture is doing a slow-motion crack-up. I wouldn't be surprised. Oh, I thought you were going to say something. I wouldn't be surprised if, after stepping down, somebody takes over, somebody else comes in and takes over Microsoft. Now, who would he trust? You think maybe it could be his old ice cream licking buddy from the old days that used to invite himself over for lunch?
Well,
I mean, he does straighten companies out. He straightened a few out here and there. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's really had a reputation for wrecking companies like maybe Mitt Romney. What do you think?
Yeah.
Windows 10 is a disaster.
Yeah, you know, and that's a story that goes way back. I mean, again, you know, that's not a new discussion. That's there have been, well, and speaking of that, you know, I mean, I mentioned Paul Allen earlier. Some folks have mentioned along the line through the years that it's interesting that Paul Allen, you know, Bill Gates looked like a 13-year-old kid and Paul Allen looked like a 40-year-old man when they were kids when they, anyway, you know.
Well, that's all I had.
Out of turn, but all right. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. Man, there's a lot left on the table. I was intended to point folks to certain topical information. I really think that Bill Gates, we need to, you know, there's some interesting stuff that's come out. So Amazing Pauly's video, let's get them all, Gates, Burks, Fauci, Soros, all of them. TrueStream Media, look who's coming to the rescue. Is that still up? Are these videos still up? You know what? Maybe we can play this, just a little bit of that, like a minute of the Sanjay Gupta, that 2011 interview that I'm talking about, a minute or so as we go out. Bill Gates in his own words, you know, we get the population down, reduce the population. What? Can we do that? Bill Gates in his own words, Sanjay Gupta, 10 years ago. Take him at his word.
$10 billion over the next 10 years to make it the year of the vaccines. What does that mean exactly?
Well, over this decade, we believe unbelievable progress can be made, both inventing new vaccines and making sure they get out to all the children who need them. We could cut the number of children who die every year from about 9 million to half of that if we have success on it. And the benefits there in terms of reducing sickness, reducing the population growth, it really allows the society a chance to take care of itself. Once you've made that intervention.
There's been a lot of scrutiny of vaccines recently, specifically childhood vaccines. There's been a lot of news about, is there a connection with autism, for example? What do you make of all that? Dr. Wakefield wrote a paper about this saying that he thought there was a connection. And there was lower vaccination rates as a result for a period of time in Britain than the United States. What are your thoughts?
Well, Dr. Wakefield has been shown, used absolutely fraudulent data. He had a financial interest in some lawsuits. He created a fake paper. The journal allowed it to run. All the other studies were done, showed no connection whatsoever again and again and again. And so it's an absolute lie that has killed thousands of kids, because the mothers who heard that lie, many of them didn't have their kids take either pertussis or measles vaccine, and their children are dead today. And so, you know, the people who go and engage in those anti-vaccine efforts, you know, they kill children. It's a very sad thing.
People who engage in those anti-vaccine efforts, they kill children. This guy says the benefit of vaccines is reducing population growth. That's literally what he said. Vaccine injury is an absolute lie. Really, the VAERS system is not real, and the NBICS, is it, National Vaccine Injury Compensation System, has paid out more than $4 billion. That's not real. And Andrew Wakefield, I think Del Brigtree is right. All of these studies that are coming out now should just be titled, Andrew Wakefield Was Right. And as far as a financial interest is concerned, is that not ironic from the guy who makes obscene profit, you know, obscene fortune after obscene fortune on the backs of this kind of stuff? Ask India how it feels about Bill Gates and the thousands of people killed by his, you know, access to health. That'll do it for today's broadcast. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor, pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side. Meat processing
company. And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new Ease-Off Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The Ease-Off lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive. Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the Ease-Off? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my Ease-Off?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. Ease-Off LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.